Good morning. Today is August 31st, 2005. It's approximately 9:55 a.m. I'm John Fedewa, part of the Fisher Body Historical Team, and I'm here today to interview Connie Swander. Connie, could you please state your name and spell your name?
My name is Connie Swander, C-O-N-N-I-E-S-W-A-N-D-E-R.
And your address is?
Oh, my address is 6313 Carlisle Highway, Charlotte, Michigan, 48813. My phone number is 543-1131, area code 517.
And your gender is?
I'm a female.
Okay.
Last time I checked.
Single, married?
Divorced.
Divorced, okay. Any children?
I have two grown children.
Okay. How about your national origin?
It's pretty mixed.
Pretty mixed, is it?
On my mother's side, I probably am Irish and English, and on my father's side, I am Indian and German. Oh, and I forgot, my mom's side also, my grandmother is Jewish, so I guess I'd be Hebrew, too. My mother's father was Irish and English, and my mother's mother was, or is, she's still living, she is Russian Jew.
Okay. What date did you hire in at Fisher Body?
The second time that I hired into Fisher Body when I came in on skilled trades was April 8th, 1985. I worked here once before. I worked here in 1972. I hired in May.
Okay. Where did you work at in 1972?
Started out on sanitation during a changeover and worked sanitation sweeping the line for a while, and then I worked in 3X trim on the small line.
Okay.
Setting seats.
Okay. When did, and you said you were laid off back in 72 or?
No, I was actually laid off. I guess it was the end of 72 that I got laid off. I was back and forth, in and out, laid off. And then I finally quit in June of 73 because I had just had a baby, and it was a miserable baby and nobody babysat, and so I couldn't work and bring her in here too.
Okay, when, so you say you hired in the second date, which was?
That was in 85, April 8th of 85.
And where did you work the second date you hired at?
Body shop, skilled trades.
Okay, so you actually hired in on skilled trades?
Correct.
Okay. So, where did you get your training? What skill trade are you at?
I'm an electrician, and I served my apprenticeship with Tennessee Valley Authorities in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Okay. So, you got your training down in Alabama, and then came up here. So
correct.
You were in the body shop when you started skill trades?
Correct.
Okay. That was 1985. What was it like back in 1985, hiring in on skill trades rather than working here and then going into skilled trades? What was it like coming in from the street on a skilled trade?
Coming in for me, it was a real shock because I was just coming off the apprenticeship program, and I had served my apprenticeship doing substation maintenance, which was all strictly high voltage. The smallest thing I ever worked on was 13.8 kV, and so I come in here and see robots and other things, and of course, after I was here about half a day, I thought, what the hell am I doing here? I had to drag up and go back what I know, but because I had a son with special needs and I couldn't get those met in Alabama for his education, and I could hear, and I had already shipped him up here to be with my mom to get him enrolled in school, I came up here looking for a job to follow him, so I found the job here, and so I decided to stay, you know, stick it out and figure, you know, add another apprenticeship, basically.
Okay, were there very many women on skilled trades when you hired in?
There wasn't very many women then, and there isn't today.
Okay, how'd you feel about that?
It's their choice, you know, it doesn't bother me.
how do the people feel?
The guys really treated me pretty good. There was a few of them that were jerks, but that comes with the territory. But overall, most of the guys were pretty decent guys. And, you know, the hardest thing was is that because I had never been in industrial type setting as an electrician, there were a lot of things that I had to learn, so immediately they just figured that I was another pretty face and dumb, that I wasn't, you know, really trainable, and that I was like a token. So it took them a while to figure out that I, you know, knew anything. So they'd shove me in some meaningless jobs, but it all worked out in the end.
Okay. Let's see here. When you hired in on skilled trades, you said you're in the body shop.
Correct.
Correct. Have you ever worked anywhere else in the plant?
Yes. Shortly after I hired in here, they put me in paint for 3 months.
Okay. Was there that a big difference from the body shop, or did you like working in the body shop better than paint? Or,
well, I'd like working anywhere better than paint. I don't like paint.
Okay.
It stinks, and it's up there where everybody sticks together. So I don't know why they put me up there. They thought that they were going to get me trained for paint, but I didn't have enough seniority to hold it. You know, so it was really stupid on management's part to begin with putting me up there and getting me trained for 3 months, because as soon as they had a shift in area of preference, I was rolled right back to the body shop.
So were you ever laid off from skilled trades?
Yes. I spent 5 months on the street.
What date was your layoff?
I got laid off on February 13th, and I came back on July 13th, same year, 87.
I'm 87? Okay, what do you mean by stick together?
Paint, sticky.
Just sticky, or that's the people, or that's...
No, the paint, stick together.
Oh, that's what you meant by stick together, okay. So now when you were laid off, it was only for 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you actually pretty much had a callback date.
No.
You did not have a callback
date.
I
was one of 40 laid off, and I was one of four that came back.
So you're actually one of few out of that group that...
Eventually, there were two more that came back. They came back after me, but there were 40 of us that were laid off. That was, they'd done all this hiring, and they were going to have all these AGBs out in trim, and it didn't work out. It was after the big change in 84. And they hired all these skilled trades people that they thought they were going to need, and then when push came to shove, they didn't need them. So they laid off. Millwrights, pipe fitters, electricians. Electricians were the last ones to go. Everybody else went before Christmas. But because management had some EITs that needed to be tapped out, and if they laid us off before the EITs tapped out, they had to lay them off, and they were protecting them because they were somebody's kids and some real, you know, so they kept us until February 13th. I think it was the 13th, or maybe it was the 14th. Maybe it was Valentine's Day we got laid off.
Okay, do you have any family members that have ever worked here?
Yeah, I'm fourth generation to work here. Okay. My great-grandfather retired out of this plant in 1952.
Okay, explain to me what an EIT is.
An EIT is a person training to be skilled trades. They don't have the schooling. It's like on-the-job training, and you do it for 8 years.
So that's until you actually...
It's in a lieu of...
I guess what I want to know is what's the difference between EIT and a journeyman?
Okay.
Like you said, you got your journeyman training.
EIT is on-the-job training strictly. They might have a class or two up here. I'm not positive, but on the outside, it's strictly on-the-job training, where an apprenticeship program is schooling and training, and it's 4 years. EIT is eight. It takes 8 years.
What was the difference between when you hired in on as a line worker in skilled trades? What was a major difference between that?
Well, the major difference, I would have to say, when I worked here in 1972, people really took care of each other. I mean, it was absolutely a whole different program than it was when I came back in 85. In 85, I didn't see the camaraderie on the line, that because I worked directly with the people working the line, even being in skilled trades, that I did in 72. It was more cutthroat. I'd get out there and talk to the people about the union and different things, and they'd tell me what the company gave them, and I'd tell them, bullshit, my grandma walked a picket line for that company and give you nothing unless the union demanded it. But as far as comparing between skilled trades and production, it's kind of hard to compare it. I mean, it's apples and oranges. I mean, production, you're humping that line 24/7, so to speak, and we're skilled trades. You're not doing a whole lot unless the line's broke down, and then you work until it works, until it's back up. You know, it's, you know, otherwise you're sort of babysitting the line, but I mean, it's kind of hard to compare them.
Okay, when did you ever get involved in the local union?
Almost as soon as I hired in.
Okay. What was your first part when you took part in?
I just started going to union meetings because that's, you know, grandma. My grandmother was very involved in the union, and so it kind of sucked me in, you know. I mean, I grew up being union. My grandfather was a Teamster. My grandmother was UAW, and my uncles, before they got, my one uncle got hired in to General Motors. I mean, they were construction unions. My one uncle, my other uncle, they'd never really hired in, but he left because he couldn't stand working the line. He was an iron worker, so he was in the iron workers. I come out of a pretty much union family, so it was a matter of getting involved, you know, do something. I had teenagers. Ended up being a single parent right after I hired in my ex-husband. Now, that time husband, we split up. And so I had teenagers, and it was pretty hard to, you know, take a position. So I just attended union meetings and listened until the kids got old enough. And then my first position as a union member was a skilled trades delegate.
Okay. So you say there was four generations of you at General Motors.
It was my great-grandfather, my grandmother, and then my mother and my uncle both worked for General Motors. My mother never worked in this plant, but my uncle did. Everybody had, but my mother worked in this plant. And then myself, so I'd be the fourth generation.
Okay. Let's go back to, so I guess, let's expand on what a delegate is. Skilled trades delegate.
Skilled trades delegate. You go to the conferences for skilled trades and take in the demands, you know, you're entering the demands that people want for the contract, and you hear what, you know, they're offering and bring back. It's very much like the big con-con, you know, it's just smaller for skilled trades.
And con-con is what?
Where everybody goes and they talk about what the new national contract's going to be about.
Okay. Now, where did you go from there?
Then I became a trustee, and I was a trustee for three terms, which is 9 years, two of which I was the chairman of the trustee. And then I became financial secretary for one term. I also, in between there, I stopped being a skilled trades delegate, and then I ran again and was reelected in there.
Okay, so
I was also on committee as an alternate committee person, but I served as a full-time committee person in all of this. And I can't remember all the years and dates.
Okay.
Because of serving as a full-time committee person was because the committee person that I was the alternate for ran and became a district shop, and we were second shifters, and he was always on day shifts, so I'd always have to cover him.
So where, okay, let's see, where did you, so you got elected to those positions.
Yeah.
What was it like being a woman in one of those positions, say as a trustee or as a skilled trades delegate? Or a committee person?
You know, I'm not a real good one to ask those kind of questions because I try to make it not be any different, you know, and I don't think that it was a whole lot different as far as in those positions, other than maybe, and I don't know if this was because I was skilled trades or if it was because I was a woman. When I was financial secretary, it seemed like that I was scrutinized a lot more than I was in ever any position I ever held.
Okay, so they treated you okay, but or you felt okay, but they scrutinized you a lot for being in those positions?
No, only as financial secretary. I don't think I was scrutinized when I was on committee, and I don't think that there was any problem when I was a trustee as far as as being scrutinized, but once I became financial secretary, I feel like that there were a lot of people that, you know, I used to get information. People would come to me and say, well, this person wants to know why you're doing this and why you're doing that. And I felt like I was scrutinized more than any of the prior financial secretaries that I've dealt with when I was a trustee.
So were you the first woman financial secretary?
Absolutely not. And I cannot tell you the woman's name that was there prior to me, but it was enough years ago that most people today don't remember who it was.
Okay, so let's go back to skilled trades for a minute. What makes skilled trades a tight-knit group?
You know, it's I can't tell you what makes them that way. I just know they are. They just take care of their own. It's kind of like the police or the fire. It's like a little fraternity. You're part of that group, and, you know, it's not as tight in here as it was on the outside when I worked on the outside, but it's still there. You know, they still stick together.
Is that outside of work, too, or just as an employee of here?
Mostly as an employee. I mean, some people become friends and chum, but I mean, that's like, you know, today they're talking about all this team build and all this team crap that they got and they're putting together. And I say crap because skilled trades, we were doing that long before. You know, we would work as a composite crew. If the line was down, you worked together and you got it up. But then when it came, you know, the line was running, and don't come to me and want me to do millwright work or pipe fitter work. And me as an electrician, you know, it's time they do their own job. But, I mean, we've always pulled together as a team and got the line running. That's all that mattered is the line ran and, the, you know, put a job out the door.
So is that just, they're all the trades like that, or just electricians, or the entire?
All trades.
All the trades are like that? Okay. Now, you were saying that you ever haven't been on a strike before?
A mini strike that we had here when over the wagons. I mean, I walked the picket line one day. My shift.
Okay.
I mean, that was a real mini one. How many days were we out? Three.
So I guess I need to know what a wagon is. What wagon is? You say you struck over that.
The wagon was the break that there where they would bring a wagon around and you could buy, you know, edible products off of this wagon that was in all the plants years ago, and we held ours longer than most.
And that'd been around for years?
As far as I know, it was here when I got here.
Okay.
It was here back in 72 when I was here.
Okay. How was working here been good for you and your family?
It's provided a good living for me, benefits, you know, all the things that go with being a union shop.
Okay, why don't you expand on the benefits a little bit?
Well, I've had good medical, dental, prescription coverage. I mean, my daughter had braces. You know, it was there. I'd paid out a couple of $1,000 for my daughter's the beginning of my daughter's braces before I went to work here. And when I came in, I had to pay some copays. I don't remember exactly what it amounted to. I mean, she's 30 today, and this was when she was 10. So, I don't remember what I had to pay some copays, but it wasn't, you know, I'd put out a couple of $1,000 prior to hiring in here because the insurance I had in dental wasn't very, well, it wasn't all that good. Did cleanings.
Okay, Connie, what was the difference between, say, the benefits and your hourly wage in Alabama, or say the South, and when you came up here to higher end?
It's pretty hard to say the South. You can say that Alabama for me because I worked for probably one of the biggest outfits and the most prestigious as far as benefits and stuff goes would be TVA, Tennessee Valley Authorities in the South. I mean, that's probably some of the best jobs you can get down there. So I was making like $12 as I topped out, because I just topped out for them as an electrician. As a matter of fact, I did a few months as they pushed me into a fifth-year apprenticeship, because if they would have topped me out immediately, they'd have had to terminate me. There was no job positions opened. I was making $12.40 an hour, which down there was, that was really a good wage at that time. The benefits were pretty fair for the area. I mean, I had major medical, where I didn't have to pay anything if one of us went into the hospital or emergency room. Doctor's office, it's pretty much traditional type of insurance. We went to the doctor's office, you paid for that, and you had to pay for your prescriptions quite a large chunk. And then you'd get some reimbursement. You'd have to pay for them and then file, and they'd give you a few dollars reimbursement on them. So when I came here, I got involved with the HMO program because I had kids, and that was ideal because you didn't have to pay for any office calls. You could just take them in and be treated at the HMOs. And at that time, there was no copay. Today, we do have a copay. And prescriptions, you know, there was only a copay on prescriptions. At that time, it was $2. So you had any prescription you wanted for $2. So, and as far as dental, the only thing I had down there for my dental was they did cleanings, too. They would do two cleanings a year. And that was about it. Everything else you had to pay for, that was about all the dental there was.
So the difference between there and here was...
was
pretty, what did you think the difference when you hired in here? What was it's like the wage you hired in at here compared to there?
Well, the wage I hired in here was $14.90. It wasn't a horrific couple of dollar difference. Almost $3, but or $2.50. But, I mean, that part, the benefits were better. The security was better. Of course, my job there, I would be terminated. They were doing a reconstruction. And I had, like, with Tennessee Valley, my seniority was... 5 years. I had about 5 years in, and I was low seniority. I was competing with people with the least was like 16 years seniority. See, it's a subsidiary of the government, and one of the things that worked against me was being a female. I didn't have any military time, and you got to count your military time as towards seniority. So most all the guys had military time, so they got to use that for seniority. So that gave even, that when I went on the apprenticeship program, there was 12 of us total that went on. There was 5 women and 7 men. And all 7 were black. They had to hire minorities, and so... they put on 7 black men and 5 women. None of the women were black. And when we ended up topping out, I don't know what happened with any of the guys. I don't know if they got offered jobs or not, but I know that out of the 5 of us, only 3 topped out. 2 ended up quitting in the middle of their apprenticeship programs. And 1 quit immediately after topping out because she got married, quit. And that left 2 of us, Marta and I. And then I quit and came up here, so there was only 1 left. It was a tough job, in reality, the substation maintenance electrician jobs were a tough job. The one gal that did top out and quit, she really couldn't do the job. They'd carried her. The guys had pretty much carried her because there was a lot of heavy work. And she ended up getting married and quitting, and she got on the program because she was some boss's daughter. But, you know, coming up here, it was a lot easier here than it was in the South. You know, down there, I got at a supervisor that came in that I trained under the whole time in my apprenticeship. Well, most of the whole time in my apprenticeship, I was about 2 months in when he came there. And the statement, he didn't make it to me, but he made it to the other guys there, that he wasn't working no niggers and no women. You know, and the only black guy that we had in the crew had just topped out, and I had replaced him as the apprentice. And he wasn't long, and he transferred to another crew. But I stayed and made it through and topped out.
Okay. Do skilled trades respect the line workers here?
For the most part, I think they do. You have a few that probably don't, you know, but I think for the most part they do.
Okay. How about friendships? Have you made any close friendships working here?
I've made quite a few close friendships working here. Some people are still here and some people are gone. A lot of the close friends I made are gone. Terry Brummel, she was probably one of the first real close friends that I made here. She took the first original buyout. She lives in Chicago now. She works, I think, for Nabisco. Then there was Roy Hartwick. He's no longer here. He put in 15 years and quit. He's out in California now working for a waterworks. We still stay in touch, and so do Terry and I. And then there's Carla Gates. There's a gal, Brenda Bond, who came here, worked here 9 years. She was out of Fisher Plant in Flint. She's since went back to the Swartz Creek plant, and we still stay in touch. We were close friends. Carla, she's still here. You know, I have other people here that I've been close friends with. I have a couple of production people that I'm pretty close friends with. I've made friends here over the years.
Okay, what's some of your favorite memories of the plant?
It's pretty hard to say. There's a lot of them. I guess one of my favorite is Jardo. Al Jardo was an electrician here who was an alcoholic. Probably still is, I'm not sure. But he'd drink his Texas tea in the afternoon after lunch. He worked the weld line. He trained me actually worked the arc booth. And he trained me. I was on second shift and he was on days. And trained me by notes, taught me how to build the MIG whips up. And sometimes when we get to see each other, coming between shifts, if day shift worked long enough for us to run into each other, because that was line time even for us at that time. And he was nuts. He'd get to drinking his Texas tea, and you could hear him hollering all over the plant. And the guys used to pull lots of pranks on him, like put him in a barrel and roll him down the aisle, and just do all kinds of things to poor old Al, or duct tape him. He'd pass out in his chair, and they'd duct tape him to his seat, and he couldn't get out and go home, and you'd hear him yelling, "You sweet sons of bitches!" all over the plant. Anyway, one of the fondest memories I have is, I was mad at the time, but when I look back at it, it's a pretty big hoot. We had these two bosses, and I went to my boss on second shift and said, "I really need some more training on these MIG guns." It was during a downtime, you know, no production was working. "Will you let me go to days and work with Al?" And he said, "Well, not a problem." So then Monday, this was like on a Friday, Monday I just showed up on days. I didn't know that I had to clear it with anybody else. My boss said it was okay, so I went. I showed up here Monday morning. Well, Al's boss was mad. "You just can't do this." So instead of letting us work on the MIG guns for him to teach me, that was back when we had the old Cincinnatis, and I don't know if any of you people remember them or not, but they were nasty, oily, greedy robots that were hydraulics, and they'd have leaks, and there'd be oil everywhere, and all their motors and stuff were up overhead, and they were filthy. I mean, layers, thick, greasy dirt. So he made Al and I climb up there and take putty knives and blower hoses and scrape those motors off with the putty knives, you know, and then blow them off with the blower. And we were, I mean, just greasy black from head to toe. You'd have to take a shower to go to lunch. And Al always went to the bar for lunch, and he'd always want me to go, and I only went one day because after he'd had a couple of drinks, he announced, and Al was not probably the cleanest person in the world, but he was, God bless him, he was a wonderful human being. He told the waitress there that this is the only sweet son of a bitch ever gave me two blowjobs in the morning because I had to blow him off with the air hose. I would not go to lunch with him anymore. Because I didn't want anybody to even begin to think. She just roared and laughed, but that was awful. But anyway, yeah, that was a whole week of nothing but grime. On Friday in the afternoon, the boss said that he could show me, so we'd had, if we had our stuff up there all done, he could show me some things on the MIG guns. But the problem being is on Friday afternoon was Texas tea time, and there was no time for Al to show me anything on Friday afternoons. So that was probably a pretty fun memory.
Okay, how did you get to work?
Drove.
Okay, did you live close to the plant or?
Never.
Where did you grow up at?
I'm originally from out around the Shalott area, and when I came back, that's where I went back to, was the Shalott area. For a while, I lived in Bellevue, so I drove from Bellevue, but that was too far, so I moved back closer to Shalott. So I always drove, you know, in.
Did you carpool or drive yourself? Or?
No, I didn't carpool. And I like to carpool. I want to be able to go when I want to go.
Okay, what did you do for lunch? You already expanded on some of that.
But. Well, eventually, most of the time, go to the bar and have a few drinks with the boys. And after work, do that too. But, yeah.
Okay. I guess my... Okay, Connie, you said you had past generations that worked at this plant. Can you expand on those? Did they tell you stories about the plant before you came here? Good stories, bad stories? Where did they work in the plant? How they felt working here?
I guess probably I didn't hear a whole lot of stories. My great-grandfather, I don't have any idea where he worked in the plant. Him and I did a lot of talking, but it wasn't at a time when I was old enough to understand that there was different areas in the plant. I mean, I just knew he worked at Fisher Body. He retired in April of 1952. He hired in right after the Fisher brothers took it over. It had originally been the Durant plant. And when it became a Fisher, he hired in here. He came up from Illinois. That's where he was originally from. And he had kids that were up here, had already grown and come up. He was older when he hired in. And I think maybe he had two daughters working here maybe at that time, or maybe they came in later. I'm not sure. Yeah, they had to have come in later because they retired years later. But anyhow, he worked here and retired. I don't remember him telling me stories much about the plant itself. And then at some point in the 40s, which was before me, my grandmother, in the late 40s, my grandmother hired in here. And she was a real hard worker, and she really didn't talk about things that happened here in the plant, stories. I mean, she'd have to talk to her directly, but that wasn't something that she had told me about, you know. Other than that, I knew that she did her job. She was very meticulous about doing her job and very proud that she did her job. And I know when she got ready to retire in 79, the supervision asked her not to retire. She was a good intermittent relief person at that time. I guess they, you know, didn't want her to lose her. Then my uncle originally worked at Plant 2, hired in 1960. And then when Plant 2 went through all of its changes, he ended up here at this plant at Fisher, and he retired out of here with about 40 years total between Plant 2 and here. He was an electrician. And then I hired in 85. He came over here in 83, and I came in 85. So the only time from, I think, from the beginning of the plant, pretty close to the beginning of the plant opening up, that there hasn't been somebody in my family working was from 79 when my grandmother retired till 83 when my uncle came here from plant two.
Okay. What was your grandmother's job?
She worked in paint, in Bonrite. That was a part of paint back then. And I don't know what all she did, except for I know when she retired that she was an intermittent relief person at the time of her retirement. I'm sure that she did many other jobs prior to getting there, putting 30 years in, because she retired with 30 years.
Okay, so what is Bondrite?
You know, I can't begin to tell you. It's just part of paint. I didn't work it, and I never asked her. So you'll have to ask her that.
Okay, what is intermittent relief?
That's the person that gave you your canned calls if you had to go to the bathroom or you had to go to medical or if you needed to be took in the foreman's office or you, anything, you know, that was the person that, you know, got you your gloves and took care of those kind of things, you know, did relief.
Okay. Would you want your children to work for GM?
Sure, if they want to. My son would love to work for General Motors. My daughter, not so much. She's not. She would work for him, but she's not really factory-oriented. But my son would, that's all he ever talked about, is he wanted to grow up and work for General Motors.
Okay. Let's, who's your favorite boss?
Oh, gosh, I don't really know that I had a favorite boss. I've always been able to work fairly well with most people, and so most of my bosses I got along pretty good with. I really liked Dick Medcoff, and in the end, I didn't like him so much in the very beginning. Doug Patrick, most people don't like Doug Patrick. He's like a little, you know, a pain in the butt, but I found out how to get around him, manipulate around him, and he ended up being a good boss for me. I don't know, Frizz, Carl Taborski, he's a great boss. You know, I don't know. I can't really pinpoint one boss that was the best, that I liked working for the best. You know, they each have their pluses and their minuses.
Okay, I guess if you can't pick a best boss, who was, say, your worst boss or one of your worst bosses?
Pat Finch. You know, and I didn't really dislike him, but he made me mad. He lied on me. Between him and Leslie Gladdy, bad story. I can tell you a story. I worked line time. Most of skilled trades was on 3 8-hour shifts. And I always ended up in an area where I was on line time. Well, I was having problems with the kids at home, and I really needed to be on 3 to 11:30. I had to be on second shift and 3 to 11:30. That way I could be home in time to make sure they were in bed by at least midnight and the house was cleared out. So I'd been off on medical leave because I hurt my leg in here. I got caught on one of the overhead carriers, and I'd been out 3.5 months waiting for it to heal. And I'd lost my job in the art booth because they'd called me. The boss I had called me and said that so-and-so would really like that job. And they were, you know, I could have had it when I came back. And I told them, no, if they wanted it, to go ahead. And I would go to the, if in classification, everybody hated underbody. I would go to underbody instead of making him go to underbody. So when I came back, I went to underbody. That gave me the 3 to 11:30 that I needed and wanted. And I was out there for a little while, and probably the one person that worked for General Motors here at Fisher Body as an electrician that I absolutely couldn't get along with was Charlie Jones, and we did not like each other, and we ended up being partners. So that was not a functional situation. And he would go to Pat Finch and tell Pat Finch all kinds of lies about me. And, of course, I would get mad. And because he was a rotten partner, I would do rotten things. And if he wanted to say that lie and say I was doing these things, I'd live up to him, and so I'd do them. just for him. So they needed somebody back on the front ends, and Leslie came to Pat and wanted me for the front ends because they knew I knew that's where I'd been for a long time, and I knew the jobs. I knew how to make the arc booth run. I could run the MIG welders and all that kind of stuff. So she went to Pat and asked him, and Pat said, yeah, you can have her. So he came out and told me that I had to report to the front end sheet metal on line time at such and such time, and I went and told him no, that he couldn't do that to me, that, you know, I needed to stay here in the underbody, and would he please just leave me here? And between him and Leslie, they lied and said no, that I really wanted to be in the front end sheet metals. And so I was angry, and I said some things that were pretty colorful to Pat, such as, if I had my very own dick, you wouldn't do this to me. And called committee on him. And so the guys the next day brought in, you know, a dildo for me to hang out my coveralls and go in and tell him that I had my own dick. Could I stay now? But I didn't do that. And I ended up back on the front ends on line time, even though I went over his head to a higher boss and talked to him and tried to get it stopped, and I couldn't get anything done through committee because they have the right to put you wherever they want you as long as you're in the area that you're in for, which was I was, body shop. So lo and behold, I went back on line time and made it the best I could and survived it. But after that, I had little respect for Pat Finch because he lies. You know, I did not. I told him I wanted to be on 3 to 11:30, and not on line time.
Okay, let me ask you, what was your most appreciated bargain benefit in all the time you've worked here?
Most appreciated bargain benefit. Well, there's so many of them. The benefits that I get, the benefits, you know, that I utilize all the time, medical benefits. I, you know, how do I pick from that and pay? I mean, I make a great wage. I mean, who would ever have thought that a poor white girl from the wrong side of the tracks would make this kind of money someday?
So you're looking at just the whole package. It's not a particular one that you've utilized over the years.
Yeah, I mean, without the ones. Yeah, I mean, it's they're all great. You know, I mean, the UAW is the one I don't like. I can tell you one I don't like that the UAW negotiated for us is January 7th, 1985 date.
Okay, and
that's pushed me down the seniority list many times because I hired in April of 85. So anybody that comes here brings January 7th of 85 with them, they go ahead of me in seniority. I mean, I just, it's kind of funny. I hired in 85, and I was somewhere around, I don't know, I was on the bottom of the pack for a long time. But when I figured it out that after I'd been here like nearly 20 years, which I'm going on 21 years now, I was still in the same position on the seniority list because even though people have retired and whatever, and I've been here longer because of that January 85 date, people coming from other plants just held me right there. I didn't really go up or down. And in retrospect, with the amount of electricians we had when I hired in to the amount of the electricians that we have today, I've held just about the same spot. Finally, I've started to move a little bit more, I noticed, when I seen the last seniority list. But for many years, I held the same position. I couldn't move. And they used to tell us that it would take 10 years for that January 7th of 85 date to go away. Well, that's bull crap. It takes 30 when that date becomes non-existent. So, yeah, that's the only one I can really say that I think sucked.
Okay, you said you're on medical leave for a while. How were you treated when you returned to the plant?
I was treated fine. Nobody gave me any problems. They just brought me back in, put me back to work.
So you didn't have any trouble from anyone coming back from the leave?
Nope.
Okay.
I didn't have any trouble getting my workman's comp either.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, say you were injured as a skilled tradesperson. How has the safety of skilled trades gotten better over the years?
Well, sometimes it's so good you can't really troubleshoot your jobs. You know, I'm saying they want you to lock things out, and you got to be able to have it operate in order to know what it's doing wrong.
Say from 1985 till now.
Oh, it's horrendously more. Like I said, sometimes it almost hinders you from doing your job because they want you to lock everything out. Well, how are you going to be able to see what's wrong if you can't make it operate? If you can't see the operation being there, you know, checking things, you know, you can't hardly tell what's wrong. That's why sometimes it...
Okay, explain what a lockout procedure is.
Where you lock the machine down where it doesn't do anything.
Okay.
Take the air off of it, take the electricity off it, hydraulic, whatever, power, whatever kind of power that makes it move. You lock it down so it doesn't move.
Okay, what do you hope for in the future?
I hope that General Motors continues to stay in business and that the UAW continues to represent the people. I hope that, you know, that we can keep jobs here in Lansing and that somebody else in my family will get to come to work here, like my son. You know, I mean, is that what you're looking for here?
Yeah.